Okay, so as mentioned, let's talk about tshuva, because we're going to get busy. Right? We're going to talk about Rosh Hashanah, we're going to talk about Yom Kippur, right? The Sukkos, obviously, Simchas Torah, and all of a sudden there won't be any time to talk about tshuva, and then Ikar Chosam and a Sefer, right? Then you're going to be, missing the main part of what we should be talking about. Okay, so let's do it. Excuse me. Wait. The laning on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, excuse me, talks is about Yishmael, right, famously, and other things. One of the most underrated parts of the laning on Rosh Hashanah is a very obscure, random discussion. And the story goes as follows, right? After Avram kicks out Yishmael, we read about something that seemingly has nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah. And you might just kind of assume that that's just bridging the gap between that story and the next story, which is the Akedah, which we read on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, but it's not true. It's very valuable in and of its own right, as we'll explain in a second. Basically, what happens is that Avraham is living in Gerar, if you remember back to Parshas Vayera, and the king Avimelech and Pichol, who is this general, come right to Avram, and he starts kissing up to him. He's like, "Avram, Hashem is with you," etc., etc. Right? He asks for a treaty, for a bris, and Avram agrees. And then, as Avimelech is turning to leave, Avram says to him, "Oh, by the way, some of your servants stole my well." It's very odd back and forth. And Avimelech says, "I don't know what you're talking about, right? I don't know what you mean, right?" And then Avram responds not by saying anything, but he sets aside seven sheep. Avimelech is like, "What's with the sheep?" And Avram explains that these seven sheep is Eidos, is testimony that I actually own these wells. Okay, Avimelech accepts the sheep, right? They do the treaty, they finish it, and then everybody leaves. What in the world is going on? So, to be totally honest, I left out a small detail, which is kind of the key, because I don't want to ruin it for you, and I wanted to be a little bit dramatic. And I think that's the key to this whole thing. And obviously, what does that have to do with tshuva? So we'll explain as follows. If you read the psukim carefully, like between the lines, yeah, so you see a fascinating response coming out from Avimelech's response to Avram's accusations, right? Avram says, "Your servant stole my well." Let's just read it. "V'hochiach Avram es Avimelech al odos ha'be'er ha'mayim asher gazlu avdei Avimelech." Avram told Avimelech about the water that Avimelech's servants stole. And what does Avimelech say back? "V'yomer Avimelech lo yadati mi asa hadavar hazeh v'gam ata lo higadeta li v'gam anochi lo shamati bilti hayom." Avimelech says, "I don't know who did this, and you didn't tell me. And I didn't hear about this until right now." That's the pasuk. And Avram doesn't say anything back. The next pasuk is, "Vayikach Avram tzun u'bakar vayiten la'Avimelech vayichrusu shnehem bris." Avram gave sheep to Avimelech and they made a treaty. Now, what's going on? So I would argue that the reason we read that on Rosh Hashanah is because we are also being accused of something. Right? We're being accused of the things we've done the entire year. Now, as you mentioned, we're going to talk about Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is not about tshuva. It's about Malchus, and we'll get to that. Okay? But we are accused on these days of, by the, whatever you want to call it, the Satan, accusing angel, whatever, of all the things we've done throughout the year. What is our response to those accusations? Right? Do we make excuses like Avimelech? Avimelech sounds, if you listen to it, he sounds like a little kid, right? "I didn't hear about this. You didn't tell me. It's your fault. You didn't tell me. I don't know who did it. I have no idea." He sounds like my 6-year-old when I tell him, like, someone spilled a bowl of cereal. So, and you, even if you look carefully, like, Avram doesn't even respond. He just kind of like nods, like, "Okay." And he gives him sheep. He didn't even say anything. He's just like, "Come on, let's go. Let's grow up here." So the question is, on Rosh Hashanah, how do we respond, right, to those types of accusations? If we respond, right, like, "Oh, but I didn't know, I wasn't sure, I didn't realize it." Okay, so you can almost imagine, like, Kosh Baruch Hu shrugging and be like, "Okay, come on, can we grow up now?" If we take the criticism to heart, though, right, if we act like adults when we're faced with these criticisms and the tshuva that we're facing, that's a much bigger step. That's obviously much more mature. That's a much better response than how Avimelech responded to Avram. So the Kriyas HaTorah, the Torah reading on Rosh Hashanah, is asking, how do you respond to your spiritual failures? Do you run from blame like a little kid, like Avimelech, right? Or do you acknowledge your failures and apologize for them and start trying to do better? So that's the avoda, right? excuse me, of these days to answer the accusations, right? To not just to come up with excuses, because God knows we always, always, always have excuses. Rav Melech quotes Rav Simcha Bonim of Pshischa, who says that Beis Din Shalmala, and again, I don't know if this is true, but Beis Din Shalmala won't ask why you sinned, because people are weak and the Yitzhar is powerful. Instead, Beis Din Shalmala upstairs is going to ask, why didn't you do tshuva? Because everybody can accept upon themselves to do better, right? You might not actually end up doing better, right? Because the Yetzirah attacks us and life happens and things are hard, etc. Right? But at least we can try now to make the decision to say, as we'll talk about in a second, right? What tshuva is saying out loud that I'm sorry and I apologize and chatasi, acknowledging the mistake and trying to do better in the future, right? Chazal tell us, right, again, also pulling from Bereishis, the Medrash Rabbah, the Bereishis Rabbah says that there's a phrase, oy lo, lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochacha, oy vey, from the day of judgment, oy vey, from the day of rebuke. And the Medrash says that Abba Kohen Bardila says that's referring to Yosef, right? When he told the brothers, ani Yosef ha'udavichai, right? I am brothers, is my father, right? Still alive. And the Shvatim, right, couldn't say anything back to him because they were embarrassed. And so says Abba Kohen Bardol in the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come with us, was going to come to us at the end of our lives and give us the same Musar. And Oy Lanu Miyom Adin, Oy Lanu Miyom Tochacha, he's also going to give us the same Musar that the brothers got from Yosef. So the question obviously becomes, that's a very vague Medrash. Then of course, the Medrash does not explain what is the Musar that Yosef gave the brothers. Yosef said, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai. That doesn't sound terribly dramatic. Like, what's the Musar? So the Beis HaLevi gives an answer that is quoted often, and he says Yosef's statement is Ha'ud Avichai was exactly that. It was a statement. It was not a question, right? Yehuda had already mentioned, right? If you read the Psukim there in Vayigash, and this is obviously not a Bereishis here, but if you're familiar with the Psukim in Vayigash, Yehuda had already said that Yaakov was already alive. And the Medrash explains that the hey is something called the hey atamia, that it was almost sarcastic. Like, my father is still alive, right? How in the world is my father still alive after so many years of pain, right, that you sold me down here? The question becomes, or the question that Yosef was trying to get at was that Yehuda, if you're getting, I apologize, I probably should really, if it was a real shir and we were in front of each other and I could give out sheets and notes and whatever, we'd read through all those psukim. But if you go through the psukim at the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, Yehuda is just, going on poetically about how Yaakov was affected, and you can't take Binyamin, Yaakov's going to be so affected, right? He's not going to be able to live. And Yosef is like, hello, where was this 20 plus 22 years earlier, right? And if Yaakov is able to live without Yosef, then he'll be able to live without Binyamin. And they couldn't, the Pasuk said, they couldn't answer him, because basically what Yosef did was he used their own actions and words against them. Right, they were arguing, oh, don't take Binyamin, Yaakov won't never survive. And Yosef's like, well, what happened? Where was this? You guys sold me. And so what the Medrash is trying to say is that the comparison between Yosef and what Hashem is going to ask us on the Yom HaDin, on the true day of judgment, is terrifyingly accurate. Because basically what the brothers were calling, what Yosef was calling out the brothers for being hypocrites. They were saying one thing, but really acting a different way. Right, they said, oh, what about all these things about, well, if we care about our father, he's gonna, what's gonna happen if we take, but they didn't care about it. But Paul, they sold Yosef and they didn't care about it at all. And that's what we do also, because we think we're good, we think we have an answer for everything, we think we have an excuse for everything, but our actions constantly contradict themselves. Right? The things that we say contradict, and the things that we do contradict all the answers and the excuses that we might give. Like, let's say a person doesn't want to give tzedakah for some reason, right? The people come around, you guys don't daven in shul on a weekly basis, but people come around in shul all the time asking for tzedakah. So let's say a guy decides he's not going to give tzedakah, or someone asks you, calls you for tzedakah before you have no rhyme, there's telemarketers, whatever. I don't give to those people. Right? You don't like their cause or how they look or whatever. And then you turn around and spend a sum of money on a ridiculous perk or whatever. I don't know. Or even worse, something that's also, I don't know, for your own kavod or whatever. So all the excuses in the world not to give that person tzedakah just fell away, right? Our own actions, right, nullify and cancel any potential excuse that you have, right, that maybe you were, it was a legitimate excuse, but then you just kind of waste that money away on, I don't know, a burgers bar, whatever. Halavai, shall come back and spend money on burgers bar. Anyway, so that's why that's why the Medrash phrases it that way, right? In two different ways. It's oy lanu miyom hadin, but oy lanu liyom hatochacha, right? There's a day of judgment and then there's a day of rebuke, right? Those are different, right? The Yom HaDin, the judgment is for the Avera. Okay. But the tochacha, the rebuke, is for the argument you could have made to excuse your actions. But that is also gone, right? Because right, we act and we cancel out our own arguments, right? So therefore, again, as the Medrash says, the punishment increases, right? Because we've not only have we done the avera, we've canceled out our own excuses by other actions, which is terrifying. But we all are definitely hypocrites in some way, and we have to obviously work on that, right? Just to give that example, I used to be very judgmental of the people who come to shul and get for tzedakah. This guy wants to marry off his daughters, or he needs, X, Y, and Z, and he needs money for this and that and the other thing, and he's buying this, and I don't even know what people buy in Hasidic circles. He needs how many shekels? I don't know. I used to be like, okay, I also want to buy those things. But you know what? That was a wrong attitude. That was inappropriate because I wouldn't give this guy 10 shekels or something, and then I'd go on Amazon and buy like a, I don't know, $27 tie when I have like 38 ties at home. So that's unnecessary. Like that was literally me being a hypocrite. Right, because it looks really bad when I'm dropping $25 on a tie that's slightly more purple than the other six that I have. So okay, so for Zeder, so that's the same idea. That's that we have to kind of right, kind of realize that sometimes when we excuse our own non-mitzvos or chas shalom araveros, right, we have to make sure that that excuse is legit, because very often right, we're just saying it, doing it for because the Yetzirah puts that excuse in our head. Okay, well, other examples of that, but again, for example, my Rebbe Reb Sacks used to say, I'm sure he still says it, that when a person has excuses not to learn, right, during Zman, maybe you have homework, or you have, you're studying for your this, or you have this job interview, whatever. So fine, so that could be legit, but when the semester is over and you don't have homework, right, and now or Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and now you don't have homework or you don't have work, and now all of a sudden you're still not learning. That's easy to be like, all of a sudden those excuses are not so aren't so strong, right? Because all of them fall away. You're being a hypocrite. Now, there are many examples. So they're just two examples. I'm sure you could come up with it on your own, but that's something to be aware of. So the Ikar Avoda in this time is tshuva, as the pasuk says in the Haftorah of Shabbos tshuva. Right? Pause again, Hosea. Shuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha ki chashalta ba'avonecha, right? Do tshuva, right? Am Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha, until Hashem. Right? The Gemara tells us in Yoma and Daf Pei Vav that the tshuva goes ad Kisei HaKavod, right? Up until and all the way up to Kisei HaKavod. That's the Gemara Darshans. And Rashi explains that why does it say Hashem Elokecha, right? Hashem, as we know, is Midas HaRachmim. Elokecha, we know, is Midas HaDin. And Rashi there on that pasuk in Hosea says, do tshuva while HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still B'midas Hashem, right? B'midas HaRachmim. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets to Midas HaDin, obviously that's much worse, right? Elokecha. And I would argue, a pshat I heard from my Rebbeim is that when the pasuk says Shuvah Hashem ad Hashem Elokecha, and again, Rav Pinkus kind of alludes to this as well, although I don't know if he actually makes this actual point, that we have to put in the work at the beginning. Again, we talked about this last week. I'll just mention it for a second. When we do the tshuva, right? So when we work on ourselves, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give us ad Shmaya. We can't overcome the Yetzirah necessarily by ourselves. So we start, and Hashem takes us ad. Right, ad Hashem, right? We go until as far as we can, and then of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us the rest of the way. Okay. Says Rav Pinkus, what is the difference? He asks, what is the difference between the tshuva of an Ama Aretz and the tshuva of a Talmid Chacham? Really, what it means is, what is real tshuva and what is fake tshuva? That's what he's saying. So again, I'm sure there are different pshatim with this, but I thought this was powerful. I do not know if this is in the white book, the English book. It's definitely in, it's in this Hebrew version of Yom Noraim. I thought it was very powerful. And he says as follows. He quotes Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that in Hilchos in Shari Tshuva, he writes, "V'lo yimatzei ichur ha-tshuva zu l'siba amaretz. Amaratzim ichur ha-tshuva." Anybody know what ichur la'acher, achar? No, different words. Not acher. Achar is afterwards. That's the word. That was what I was looking for. Ichur is to delay. And if there's an ichur, that means there's a delay. Like Itanya was delayed getting home from Gan today. So if there's an ichur, that means a delay. You only find a delay of tshuva by amaratzim. That says Rabbeinu Yonah. And the bracha, the Gemara brachos in Daf Yutes says, "Im ra'isa talmid chacham she'aver avera balayla." If you see a talmid chacham that did an avera at night, let's say you see it, right? Not like hearsay. You see a talmid chacham doing avera. Al taharer acharav bayom, says the Gemara. Do not think badly about him during the day. Shevadai osa tshuva, because for sure he has done tshuva. So the first thing, right, says Rav Pinkus, the difference between Am Haaretz and the tshuva Talmid Chacham is a time thing. As we talked about last week, again, just mentioning quickly, it's get to work. And Am Haaretz delays tshuva and puts it off until it's, I don't know, more comfortable. He has more time on his headspace. I don't know. Talmid Chacham does it right away, right? And right away, right now, today, not tomorrow, tonight, after today, after this year, write something down, start some sort of tshuva process, whatever it is, right? Pick an example. I don't need to give you an example. You can all think about something in your head right away, as soon as this is over, right? Take a post-it note right over here and stick it to your wall or stick it to, you know, the door, or and start working on something. That's A. B, though, is what is real tshuva, as we alluded to before. What is real tshuva as opposed to superficial tshuva? And again, we've been talking about this, but and there's a lot of explanations and stuff, but let's go through one of them. Rav Pinkus says that an Am Haaretz thinks that the mitzvah of tshuva is the feeling. That a simple person thinks that it's a feeling that you're trying to arouse yourself to feel about tshuva. Talmid Chacham understands that there's halachos involved. There's an actual process. There's actual work to be done. For example, and he says that, let's take, for example, you know, a mitzvah of sukkah, right? This is not a tshuva by sukkah. This is just a parable, like how simple people view one thing as opposed to how Talmid Chachamim and from people view it. So, for example, sukkah. The Am Haaretz, the regular person, thinks that it's the sukkah is about a feeling. You want to feel the chag when you walk into the sukkah. So you hang a ton of decorations, you set up the lights, all et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Talmid Chacham realizes that while all those things are nice and they're important, the first thing you have to do is check the kashrus of the sukkah. You have to check the walls. If you don't have a simple sukkah like we have on our porch, you have to make sure you got, you know, the 90-degree angles, and you have to have the schach everywhere, and the schach has to be kosher, et cetera. The ikur of everything is sitting in the sukkah, al pi halacha, on sukkahs, right? The decorations are nice, and the feeling, the beauty you get is important, right? There's a whole Inyan of a hiddur mitzvah and making mitzvahs beautiful for sure, but the first thing, aleph beis, is that you could sit in a kosher sukkah. And the same thing is true with tshuva also. The Am Haaretz, and again, I use that phrase very, very loosely, right? And Am Haaretz, someone who thinks that tshuva is a feeling, again, Am Haaretz, just to be clear, and is it like a derogatory term? It's like an insult. I don't mean that. A simple person thinks that tshuva is a feeling, right? They skip davening, right? They one day they sleep late, and so they, let's say, they accept upon themselves to, I don't know, learn Torah at night, or to fast, or like to give tzedakah. So that's nice, but that's not tshuva, right? That you should do that, but those things make you feel better, right? As if you like made it up to Hashem, right? So that's not tshuva. Right, tshuva is saying chatasi, avizti, pashati, saying I messed up. Lo ashuv oda, I'm gonna try and not miss davening tomorrow. Right, that formulation. And just like if you get angry and you yell at your friend or your spouse or whatever, or your parents, you can't just fast and make it up to them. They don't care that you didn't eat for 12 hours. Right, it doesn't do anything unless you go up to them and say I'm sorry, that was wrong. Right, it doesn't help. Right, so as Gemara says, Yuma, right? Gemara says Yuma and Daf Pehe. Achiratz Chaveiro, right? We know that Yom Kippur atones for sins between us and Kosh Baruch Hu. Doesn't atone for sins, but on the Chaveiro, because of this matter, right? What does he care that you gave tzedakah if you yelled at him or her or whatever it is? Right, so we have to do the tshuva process. We have to go through with the actual. And this is a mistake. I'm going to try and fix this. Right, the actual aspect. That we're dealing with in our lives, not just, you know, kind of make it up in some other way, which is maybe easier or makes us feel better. So that's A, to attack the Avera, right, head on and not just like compensate by doing something else. Again, by all means, do more mitzvos. That's fine. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. But if there's a specific area where it needs working on, you can't make up for, I don't know, Lashon Hara by shaking the lulav. Right? It doesn't make sense. You have to do tshuva on the actual Lashon Hara itself. Furthermore, says Rav Pinkus, that when we do tshuva, again, and this is important, I think, to keep in mind as well. This is not about what tshuva is, but what tshuva accomplishes. And I think sometimes this aspect is not necessarily discussed as much. And I think that, as we'll see in a second, there's real serious ramifications for this formulation of what happens when we do tshuva. So we mentioned last week that the siman for Elul, right, the constellations, the zodiac for Elul, is Virgo, right? Is the I guess the virgin, however you call it, right, whatever you call the constellation. So the Ramban writes that this shows the love between us and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, just like the love of a man and his new bride. But Rav Pinkus, right, Rav Pinkus says there's another connotation, because the pasuk in Yirmiyahu says in Perek Lamed Aleph says Shuvi Betulat Yisrael, do tshuva, right? The betula of Yisrael. What does tshuva have to do with being a betula? Being a basula. So Rav Pinkus explains that tshuva does even more than we imagine. Right? We think that when we sin, we do tshuva, right? Then Hashem makes it as if we never sinned. Good. But it's not only that. It's not only that Hashem erases the sin, right? Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu, makes us as if we're born anew, like a woman is born a besula, right? We are born anew, right? It says Rabbeinu Yonah writes that Bayomahu, right, on that day when we do tshuva, right, Yashlich kol psha'av asher asa, a person will throw away all the sins that he did. V'yaseh atzmo ki'ilu bo bayom nolad. And a person is made as if they are born on that day. Ve'in b'yado lo zchus v'lo chova, and a person doesn't have neither merit nor chiyuv, right? Nothing positive or negative, no averus and no mitzvos. V'zeh hayom tchilas ma'asov, and that day is the beginning of their actions. Says Rav Pinchas, on that day when a person does tshuva, it's not as if we have no sins anymore or that our past has been forgiven. It's as if a person has no actions whatsoever, right? It's a new page, it's a new leaf, it's a new chapter. You are no longer the person who did those actions, right? You're not a baal tshuva with a past. Right? You're not an ex-con who repented and got out. You don't still have your tats or whatever, right? You're not the same person who did those actions, right? Tshuva as if you did a new person. Says Rav Melech, this is why, right, we say in Slichot. I'm not sure how often you guys say Slichot, but at the end of Slichot, we say Asei Laman Yonkei Shadayim Shelo Pashu, right? Forgive us for the babies who are nursing, right? Who have not sinned. We say that right every at the end of every slichot. What in the world does that have to do with anything? Why in the schus of the babies? Babies don't have any schusim. They don't have any free will or choice. Or like, well, how does that make sense? They have no bechira chavshus. Like, what does that have to do with anything? So it says Rav Melech, a good quotes of Aaron of Bells, says it's not referring to babies. Right? It's referring to us. When we do tshuva, we become babies. We are, quote unquote, born again. Again, that's a Christian phrase that Chas v'Shalom we're going to bring in here, but that's what it means. As the Gemara says in Brachos, again, you guys know this Gemara Lama Dalet, that I'm sure, right, has been quoted in every Yom Noraim and Elul Shir that you've listened to, right, and Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, etc. But Makom she Bali Tshuva Omdim Tzadikim Gemurim Einam Omdim, right, in the place where Bali Tshuva stands, right, great complete Tzadikim, right, cannot stand, and there are a million interpretations, but one of them is that a complete Tzadik, while they are great, still has some sort of past. Now, obviously, he's a complete tzaddik, so I'd imagine he's doing fine. And that past is not the same past that we have. But a baal tshuva doesn't even have a past, right? That's the point. Right? He literally doesn't. He or she does not have a past. The Beis Avram, who's I think the father of the Slonim Rebbe of the Nesivos Shalom, but definitely one of the Slonim Rebbes, says there's no great accomplishment. He gives a mashal. He says no great accomplishment to turn gold into a bracelet. Right, if you know what you're doing, you can take gold, you can melt it down or make some sort of design, turn it into a bracelet, fantastic. There is something miraculous if you take a dirty towel and make it into a bracelet. And he says, the Beis Avram, we are all dirty towels, and when we do tshuva, we become gold bracelets. Right? We become completely different beings. We're nursing babies. We're Virgos. We're literally different people. And I think, again, not me, and Anibikatnusi, right, in my humble opinion, that this viewpoint is helpful for several reasons. First of all, I think, again, you could dispute me, and that's fine if you do, but I think it's easier to make decisions about your actions that you're kind of not sure about if you're viewing your life as a clean slate. Right? The Rambam's language in Hilchos Tshuva is that a person should always view their chiyuvim and zechuyos, right, their mitzvos and their averos, as 50-50. You should always view yourself as 50-50 so you can make a decision, because the next situation that arises, right, will tilt the scales, right, in one direction or the next. So again, you can either have that perspective, or you could just simply view as if you have no actions, right? Again, when you do tshuva, so you're born again, right, as we say, right? You have no action. You're 0-0. Forget 50-50. There's 0-0. Right? And this is going to be the first thing that you do. Right? What do you want the first thing to do? You want it to be an aver, you want it to be a mitzvah. Right? If you have that frame of mind, I would argue, perhaps, it becomes easier to make the right decision, right? As opposed to, when you're just lugging around tons of baggage and you're like, well, I've never done this thing before in my life. I've never succeeded. I might as well not bother. Right? So no, it's not that you've said so much lashon hara in your life, and it's so hard to stop, and I don't know how. No, you've never said lashon hara before. If you do tshuva for lashon hara, you have never said lashon hara before. You were born now. You have no idea what that is. You don't know how hard it is. I mean, you do, but because that's part of the yetzer hara. But it's literally the first time you face this test. So go overcome it. So go do it. Right? When if you're faced with a challenge that's supremely hard for the first time, right, a person doesn't necessarily have the baggage and the weight of, well, this is impossible, forget it. Sometimes it's exciting to try things for the first time, and maybe there's less of a, there's no fear of failure, no preconceived notions, etc. That's A. I would argue, again, you could disagree, but I think that's valuable. And second of all, I would argue that if you view yourself as if you're being born again, right, again around Rosh Hashanah, it means that you don't have a past. We all have a past. Right? All of us regret the stupid things we did in high school and maybe after high school, and then we got from, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't do that stuff anymore. Tshuva doesn't mean that. Tshuva means you never had a past. Tshuva means you got from at 10 and never had any fun in your life whatsoever. Right? This is a completely different level. Right? This is Tshuva means you are starting anew, right? And with a clean slate, mamish. And that also is helpful, right? In kind of guiding yourself and thinking that, oh, I'm not bogged down by previous failures, etc. Right? This is a real opportunity. No matter how many times you've failed at X, Y, and Z, whatever halacha you're working on, it's a real opportunity to start fresh because, you, again, in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, you've never done that before. Okay. Finally, let's just finish up with a little, a couple of suggestions here. When again. Tshuva means, again, the phrase that they use very often is lefashfesh b'masav. A person should search their actions, kind of make an accounting of their actions and analyze, right? Just a lot of the mashals are like, just like you would take an accounting of your business, you should take an accounting of your life. I don't know, some people say you should take an accounting of your day. I don't know if you want to get, minute by minute. That's ready. Fantastic, tavo'a bracha. But I would argue, at the very least, right, it should be like bedikas chametz. Right, on Bedikas Chametz, just like on Erev Pesach, right? Checking for Chametz does not mean looking on the table, looking on the couch and calling it a night. Right? It really means you should actually search your house. Now, some people have a shorter Bedikah, and that's not, I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't do a fake Bedikah. That a lot of people do a fake Bedikah, a short Bedikah, and that's okay. Why? Because up until then, right, for the month before, right, you know how like the night before Pesach, your entire house is kosher to Pesach, except for like one room where you put all the 10 pieces of bread. So that's fine, right? That's the Haredi, the halacha talks about how if you go into a room and you clean it out, you look in all the places and you say, okay, this place is no chametz, right? You close it off, you say kosher bezak. So that counts. That counts as your bedikah. So people are really doing bedikah the entire month. They just don't realize it. Okay, anyway, but when you check your actions, it should be at least like that, right? It should be some sort of, deep dive, right? Now, without something, it's not something superficial. And I would argue, again, we've mentioned the work and putting in the work. I would argue that you should try this time around, right? Again, it may be the last couple of times you did tshuva. It was Shana Aleph for sure. It wasn't even like a thing. Okay, Shana Bet already, right? You definitely were starting to think about it. And now for a lot of the guys, you're already starting to hit, this is the maybe the second real tshuva process you've gone through. For some of the older alumni, right? So already you got done perhaps three or four or five already. But I would argue that this year you should try something you and do not imagine that you could ever give up. Pick something that you do not even, doesn't even occur to you that you should ever give up. Now, hold on, relax before you start, saying that you think that I'm going to tell you to throw away your phones. Let me explain. I don't mean that you should actually give that up, but let's set the bar higher than you ever imagined before, and then we're going to work back down, as you'll see in a second. For example, on, gosh, what day was it? Was it Monday? I think. There's a pigu in Ramot. So pigu in Ramot, there's a Arab Yimach Shemo shot up a bus, and one of the people that were killed was a kid in Pinchas' yeshiva, and he was his madrich in high school, and so the levaya was literally in his yeshiva, and yes, he's a wreck. But just to explain why, what does that have to do with anything? So before the pigu in Ramot that morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning, what I do when I don't watch football at night on Sunday nights because the time thing and it takes forever. You can watch a football game in like an hour if you like fast forward it. So like 8 in the morning, 8 a.m., and I watched the game from last night. Okay, and then I went to Sem at I don't know 9:15. I heard about the pigu at about 9:30, so I thought could. Again, our approach, right, is that spirituality protects. The Gemara says this in many, many places that the mitzvos and Torah and all that type of stuff protects Am Yisrael. Again, I'm not going to give examples because we've talked about it before and you can find it in previous shiurim, but there are Gemaras all over the place that says that learning Torah and doing mitzvos protect Am Yisrael. So it popped into my head, could I have prevented the pigua if I had been learning Torah instead of watching football? Now, obviously, that's ridiculous. And the Yetzer Hara is trying to get me to feel bad about myself and no one should ever think that, that. But I would start to think maybe I should not watch football. Is that an overreaction? Is that blaming myself too much? Maybe not. Now, again, I agree with you. I think that's overreaction, and I think it's harder trying to get me to feel bad about myself, etc. But it started to think, I was thinking that yes, this is maybe perhaps how Chuva should start. Maybe we should take something that is so far beyond. I love football. For me to give up football would be very hard. But maybe I don't need to spend an hour and a half every week watching a football game. I don't know. That's something to think about. What I'm trying to say is, it would never occur to me going if I would just sit down and be like, all right, what do I need to work on in my life? It would never occur to me that I would be like, I got to get rid of football. Wouldn't even pop into my mind. It would never occur to me to you, for you guys, examples for you guys. It would never occur to you probably to drop Netflix entirely or get a kosher phone or I don't know, insert whatever very out of the box, crazy, insane. Wear a burqa. No, Chas v'Shalom, I'm kidding. No, w try some crazy example. But maybe we should kind of entertain those possibilities and then maybe back down a little bit and come back off of that ledge and find something that we can accomplish, right? Maybe we're not going to chuck Netflix entirely, but maybe there is a show that you really should give up. And the only reason you're going to consider giving it up is because you considered chucking everything. And now you're backing yourself down off the ledge and saying, but maybe there is something here that we can accomplish, right? Maybe I don't need to, skip football entirely, but maybe I could watch every other week or something, and I could learn during that time, right? Again, that's something I never would have considered, but maybe since I'm in that realm, I'm thinking about it, right? I'm going outside the box, I'm going outside of the comfort zone, right? Don't only go back to the basics, right? We talked about it, like every year we go back to the basics: Lashon Hara, Shabbos, davening. Yes, obviously work on those things, but also take a leap and think about maybe this is relevant for me. It may not be, and it could be correct that it may not be, but at least move the goalpost, at least move the hoop higher than what you're shooting for right now. You would be shocked at what you can actually accomplish, right? Even if you think there's no way in the world you can accomplish X, Y, and Z, something that is totally crazy, I bet you could do something in that realm. Again, pick whatever it is. So that's A, that's suggestion A. At the same time, though, I will say, and it's important to say, and I realize right now as I'm scrolling down that I did not write down the Vort from Rav Melech, which I wanted to quote. So I'm not gonna just guess, not guess. I remember it ish. I'm not gonna say it. Maybe I'll save it for another time. But at the same time, the little things are exceedingly valuable as well. Right? Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that the little tshuvas that you do, right, are not valuable. Right, they are exceedingly valuable. Right, the Ibn Ezra writes on Shuvah Yisrael, fascinating. I'd never seen this before. I saw this yesterday, that the Ibn Ezra comments on that pasuk in Shuvah Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha, the pasuk in Hosea. He says, fascinating. This is great. I love this so much. He writes Me'at Me'at Ad Hashem, a little, until you get to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right, this is not like Rav Pinkus or Rav Melech giving some Chassidus drasha. This is the Ibn Ezra. Right, this is a Rishon, a commentary on the Chumash or on Tanakh. They're saying tshuva is me'at me'at, a little bit at a time, right? One step after another, right? And I'm not saying, right, I gave the suggestion of trying to think higher, but don't ignore and don't underestimate the little things, right? The little steps, right, that you need. I do remember just one mashal. This is not what I was going to quote, but I remember when Rav Melech came to Arnof, he gave a mashal that if you're lying on the train tracks, for example, right, and there's a train hurtling at you, right, blaring its horn, right? I've told you guys this before, I'd imagine. Probably. How much movement is necessary to save you from the oncoming train? Not much. All you got to do is roll to the right or roll to the left or whatever, and you'll be fine. So it's not that, right, the little things are not valuable. They're supremely valuable, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them, right, just like, right, these great, amazing things that people do. Both of them are equally valuable. So I would argue, like I said before, don't waste any time. Post-it note. Put it on your door, pick something, right, that you're doing. There you go. Excellent. Naomi's are more yellow than mine. I'm very jealous. Neon yellow is always better than regular yellow. Anyway, pick something. Don't delay. If you're in a car, do not do this. Natalie, do not in your Tesla. We bring back the Teslas. Do not write down. I'm just kidding. Do not write down in your car. Do not look at me. Look at the road. Okay. Drive safe. That's what you should take. And get to work and start working and pick something small. I would argue on the post-it note, take two things. Write something small, write something simple that you can accomplish that's going to be easy, and then write something insane. And obviously, you don't necessarily have to do the insane thing, but back it down and see if you can fulfill one aspect of the insanity that maybe you would never have considered. And kind of go outside your comfort zone and accomplish that. All right, guys. I will wish it was great to see everybody. Much hatzlacha. We're looking forward to next week. And Ashkenazim are finally going to join you guys in Slichot. So, Bezat Hashem.